Hello, listeners. Kathy Lawless, Life Story Curator, bringing you this podcast series, How Did I Get Here? A series of interviews designed for people just starting out in their careers, in transition, or possibly feeling stuck, giving them access to stories of people who have been there, done that, so that they might be inspired with some new ideas, or maybe just comforted knowing they are not alone, and that everybody starts somewhere, and everyone goes through times of transition and times of when they feel stuck. Today, I am excited to interview Danny Chacon. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
And Danny is a master trainer in the field of martial arts and a professional athlete. So Danny, I'm very excited to be interviewing you today because you're in a unique industry and profession. So this is, I think, going to be fascinating. So, welcome.
Yes. Thank you. I'm very excited to be part of this.
And listeners know, I always like to start with my icebreaker questions, which are, where did you grow up? How many siblings do you have? And where are you in the birth order? And how do you think that influenced you?
Yeah, so I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And I came to the United States when I was 7 years old, and I was raised in Jersey. I'm an East Coast guy, and I've been there for quite a while growing up. I have two other siblings. I have an older brother, and I have a very young sister. And there's three of us. I wouldn't say I was the middle child because my older brother is only 2 years apart, but my younger sister is quite younger. So I guess I'll relate more as the youngest.
It was for the time you were growing up, you were the youngest, right? And then all of a sudden she comes along, now you're the middle.
Yeah, it was a wonderful blessing, though. I never thought how amazing it would be to be an older brother to a younger sister.
Oh, very cool. What's the age difference between her?
Sure. My brother's 2 years older. My sister is 18 now. She just turned 18. Like, really, really fun story. Recently, my partner and I, and as I would say my partner, I would say my girlfriend, and we took a road trip from Denver to DC, to Maryland, where my family is. Mm-hmm. And I surprised her with a car, with my own car, as her birthday present because she turned 18. And,
wow.
Yeah, and this kind of also relates to the person I am and the person I want to influence others. I really believe that we have a tie to those close around us to do our best and show them that we can give more than we really thought we can. And with my sister, she's just been a wonderful person, and I wanted to surprise her. And we took this road trip, and it was quite difficult. It was quite a hauling trip.
Yeah, that's a long trek.
Yeah.
Because you're going from Denver to Maryland, right?
Yeah, we made a few stops, and it was a great thing for our relationship, too. We got to learn. You learn about somebody really quick after spending so much time in the car with someone.
Or after being with them in isolation for, what, 6 or 8 weeks, too, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think isolation is it brings other emotions out of you, which is interesting, too. Right. That's its own conversation.
So you get out there. She didn't know she was getting the car. I take it. This was a surprise.
She didn't. And I dwelled on the idea of telling, I'm asking her how she's doing with her license, because I was terrible. I'm like, when I was getting my license, I failed like 4 times, and I was raised by a single mother, and she could only do what she could manage to do, and God loved her to death for who she is and what she's done for us, but as a single parent, she couldn't really take all responsibilities, and my brother and I had to figure out on our own. And once I started really working hard and saving money, I ended up buying my first car, which it was a dud. It broke within like 6 months. But yeah. I wanted to have her a great experience with her first car. And during that time, I thought back on it. And I was like, I want her to make her first car something special. And it was a memory that I hold dearly to me. And she's still she still like has all my trophies, all my titles, all my world championship titles in her room. She has me as her hero, and I have her in my heart.
Wow, that is cool. Well, thank you for sharing that story, because that does give us some insight into who you are and how you are with your family.
Thank you. So,
well, what kind of sports did you and your brother participate in?
And this is a interesting thing people realize is that actually when I was younger, I never really played sports. I was really unhealthy. I was really overweight and had really bad asthma. And so I really never played sports. I was more of a theater nerd. And I played, I also played chess and sometimes tennis. But I never was big into sports. And this is how it resonates with where I am in my career. From not playing and not being an all-star athlete to becoming a professional athlete. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to get into that piece then. So, okay. Okay, well, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit here. On a fun meter, on a scale of 1 to 5, where would you put yourself? 1 being a couch potato and 5 being the life of the party.
I would go a good 4. I love that question, by the way, Kathy.
So you give yourself a 4. So you're almost the life of the party.
Yeah. What about yourself?
Well, on any given day, I might be a 7 or an 8. But then sometimes I am a bit of an introvert, so I do need to be by myself and do things like I play the piano. I'm creative. There's parts of me that I need to be by myself to recharge. So, in my family, I'm known as the director of entertainment. So when we go on trips and stuff, I do my role. My sisters are in charge of like the food, the planning, and some of these other things. I'm in charge of the entertainment.
That's a good role to have. Yeah.
It is. And it's, but it can be a lot of work too. As I've had to come up with game shows and costumes and themes and So anyway, this isn't about me. This is about you. So let's get back to you. So on the risk-taking meter, where would you put yourself? Same scale, 1 to 5, 1 being lowest and 5 being high.
6.
6. Ooh, okay. And is that, some people, when they ask that question, sometimes they differentiate between, their professional and their personal lives, that they might be one or the other. Are you a 6 in both?
Either I'm all in or I'm all out.
Oh, awesome. So you are who you are, and you are a 6, man. Okay, well, so let's talk now about, what you're doing today as a master trainer and a professional athlete. And then we're going to get into, how did I get here?
Sure, absolutely. My most of my time in work is helping many studios, martial arts studios, developing curriculums, programs, and helping with their instructors. Martial arts changed my life. And this is kind of resonates back me being unhealthy and being overweight and not really have any self-esteem. So I'm really tied into spreading that message and continuing to it. As a professional athlete, I believe that high risk equals high rewards. In my area of field in fighting in mixed martial arts and also in Muay Thai kickboxing, there's a lot of ups and downs, but the highs are the best feelings in the world. And the lowest obviously is you're crumbling down. There's a great quote by Theodore Roosevelt about the man in the arena. Have you heard it, Kathy?
Yes, I have, but please share it. I wanted to hear it from your perspective and how you incorporate it in your life.
Absolutely. I'm not going to word it word by word because it's quite a long quote, but it really resonates with my life and how I lived and into going back to being a 6 and moving forward in every area. But it's not the critic that counts. It's the man that's inside the ring, in the arena, his sweat, dirt, all the experiences he's gone through. You're living your life and you're the only one to live it. You're your own hero of your story. And as a professional athlete, I love out there and compete and not only get as much data about the sport, the art, but I get more data about myself, how driven I am, how professional I am, how much commitment can I put into something. That those moments elevate the rest of my life. And I could be a better brother, I could be a better friend, teacher, a better entrepreneur, and a better business owner.
Yeah, wow. Well, I see how that all, it is, you know, it's a very comprehensive view of you. I love this. This is so great to be, you're so reflective and so clear on who you are and what you're about. So you've already given us a little bit of a glimpse of that wasn't how you always were, or maybe that was your philosophy, but you just had some other habits that didn't support that. So let's go back to kind of that junior high time frame, high school, and what did you want to be when you grew up? How did you get to where you
are? Sorry to interrupt you. I wanted to be a nurse. And I wanted to be either a doctor or a nurse. And I remember that clearly when I was very young. I would be playing with like doctor clothes and I'd be pretending I'm taking care of patients. And that would be like my dolls, well, not dolls, but my toys. So, and I just had this this unique feeling of helping, of serving others. But there was a unique feeling of just helping others and serving others. Like as I was getting closer to, and then there's another part of myself that I wanted to express. I'm very into art. I paint, I draw, I color. I had a scholarship for art at a school in New Jersey. So there's those two big components, the serving and helping others and the artistic side, which led me to martial arts.
Okay, you're going to have to help us with that leap there.
Sure. Which part would you want me to explain a little bit more if I got to
it? How did that lead you to martial arts?
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, actually, when I started playing football, and I wasn't the greatest athlete, like I was mentioning before. And a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine who was a stellar athlete, asked me to take a karate class with him. And when I was in high school, I was okay in grades, but I wasn't really disciplined or I wasn't going anywhere with strong direction. I knew that that I needed some form of discipline, and football would have been a great way to start, and tennis was okay, but I decided to take a leap of faith and go to karate class with my friend. Once I got there, I was hooked. The sensei spoke really well, and he saw a lot of the inner champion in me. And that's something I really didn't have too many people look at me that way. Not having a father figure. And my older brother was great, but he has his own trauma to deal with. After I started training with him, I started developing a more appreciation to my body and to what I can do. And I used that vessel to just improve myself. I left high school. I went to junior college, and I was still training. And I never looked at it as a career first. It was just a passion, something I really enjoyed doing. I was looking into business management and business administration as a career path in school. And martial arts was just a passion, something that I really enjoyed doing, and something I really was connected to. One of my old instructors talked to me, and he mentioned to me that if you're interested, you can help teach here, teach there. And at the time, I was not interested at all. I just wanted to practice my art. Flash forward to when I moved to Maryland. And during that time, it was really hard. Once I graduated high school and I was in college and I was trying to figure out who I was, the one thing that was consistent with realizing who my outlet was training with martial arts. Mm-hmm. Once I moved to Maryland, another friend of mine asked me to come back to his gym, and I started training again. At that time, and a lot of your listeners can maybe relate with this, but as a college student, you really don't have any funds. You're like on ramen noodles, going to the bar for like $2 happy hours. And I didn't really have the funds to pay for my martial arts training. And So we decided to cut a deal. I went up to the owner one day and I told him, hey, if you let me clean your mats and bathroom and I can train for free, how does that sound to you? And I was 19 years old. And he said, yeah, sure. That's a deal. So we shook hands on it. I never had a deal with another adult, like that kind of deal. Mm-hmm. He started letting me clean the mats and I was doing all the accessories for the business. And in return, I was able to train. What I didn't know that my mentor, my teacher, was actually a world champion, was a two-time world champion in martial arts in Muay Thai kickboxing. And he also was a graduate from George Washington University with an MBA. He was just a wonderful mentor that I never expected to have. And he had put me on his wing. I started learning more about martial arts, learning facilities, being a better athlete, being more confident. And as years passed by, he gave me more opportunities to teach, to do seminars, travel, to compete nationally, internationally. And there's so much more. There's a plethora of stories I can say, but that's how my story originated.
Oh, wow. So you start out kind of as a, I'll just do this with a friend of mine, because it probably would be good for me. And then it turned into a passion on your own. Then you turned into trading out, doing work so you can train more. And then you start competing. Wow. Okay. So how did you get from it sounds like competing, you know, nationally then to you know, because I believe world champion is in your resume as well, right?
Yeah. And well, like going back, I never really competed in school and high school. Like I've done some soccer tournaments, but, you know, never scored a goal. Any position I was in, I was terrible at. If you put me in the goalie, the other team would score like 20 goals. If you put me on the field, I'll miss the tackle. You put me on the baseball, I'll miss the catch. But something sparked inside of me when I first started competing. I lost. And I had to really look back on myself. If this is something I really enjoy doing, I had to have a laser focus and get better at this sport. The first few matches were very embarrassing. Actually, one of them, my brother was there, and I was knocked out in the first round. And I remember when I went back.
Knocked out of the competition.
Yeah, I was knocked out unconscious. Wow. It was someone like I didn't train. I wasn't taking it serious. And then my opponent did exactly what he's trained to do and put me to sleep, which is not good. So, yeah. And I think I started learning more about myself because I started putting myself in uncomfortable positions. And I started learning a lot more about discipline, a lot more about grit. And in my area of competition, every little second matters. Just like in any sport, it really matters those moments of glory. Are you able to take that big risk? Are you able to take the next step? Are you able to take the next punch? Are you able to land the next kick? How mm-hmm. willing are you be? How are you willing to be vulnerable in such a sport that every second, every split second matters? You're consistently you're problem solving at the highest level, because the other person on the other side, they're trying to win any way possible. They're trying to knock you out, choke you, try to win by points. It is their objective to beat you. And so you have to reciprocate that same energy and then even more. So I had to learn about grit through competition. I developed a great amateur career in the beginning and took me to the WKA, it's called the World Kickboxing Association, the national tournament. I defeated all my opponents. And I got on to be on the USA team, for 2012. The World Championships is held once a year in different parts of the world. Last year, I believe, was in Germany, and the year before was in Spain. The year I went was in 2012, was in Florida, was in Orlando. What's that?
That's convenient. It was in the U.S.
Yeah. And that's its own story about, I would love to dive into a little bit later about why that things fit into pieces. And I'll elucidate more about it very soon. But it was in the U.S., so it made it very easy. I got to be part of the USA team. We fought other countries. I came out to be my last opponent. I was Russian, very tough opponent, very hard worker. But I beat him, and I was crowned a world champion in my division. After that, I came back to my D.C., Washington, D.C., where I was training and living and running my business. I applied to be in fighting, you can win your professional card. Once you establish a good career, a good set of numbers of matches, and the state athletic commission can see that you're proficient at the sport. So you would go to the state officials and they would grant you a professional license. And you'll go to court, you'll do all these, you'll bring a case. So my case was pretty strong. I had a strong amateur career, good work ethic, no criminal record, nothing like that. I used all my martial arts training just for competition, never once used it to hurt anybody else. Yeah, I got granted my card. And
those are all the things that that weigh in as you move from being an amateur to a professional, huh? They look at all of those things?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is hard to convey sometimes, but my sport, you are learning to physically hurt people. And I would love to say that no one's ever used it for the worst, but there are people that used it for the worst. And this is where discipline, respect, all these components in martial arts really, really are pillars. And once you get granted your state athletic commission, they look at your record and look if you've been a quality person, if there's anything that they're missing, because you're a licensed threat, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and you're a weapon.
Yeah, you're a weapon. Yeah. But after Dubai, I got my professional license. I started competing in the big shows. One of the highlights of my career was 2017, and I fought at the MGM Grand in front of 5,000 people. And this was this was a great show. This is one of my best shows ever. Having 5,000 people there and just cheering me on, and all my friends and family. That my brother, who actually saw my first match and saw me get knocked out, he asked me, "Don't ever ask me to come back to a fight unless you win." And yeah, and
no pressure.
And after so many years of fighting, this one was a huge one. I got a huge contract by a great promotion. They were excited to have me. They put me in all their banners and all their commercials. And I asked my brother, I was like, "This is it. This is the one. I'm going to make you proud, Jose." And he brought my little sister. My family was there. My friends were there. My coworkers, my partners in my business. Everybody was there, and crowds were raving. People were out of their seats, and I was the fifth on the card. And once the spotlights blinked high and the music was up, the energy was just so electric. And when I went in there, I showed the best performance of my career. And that's like a highlight of one of the best highlights of my life.
Wow. Congratulations. Yeah, because there's something about if you got to, as you were saying earlier, you got to perform on the big stage at the big time when the stakes are the highest, right? That I mean, and it's the little details and all that has to align for you. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That people are on that big stage and they don't have their best showing.
Yeah. It's my partner, my girlfriend, she mentioned it to me. It's like the moment of heroism. When the last second of the basketball game, who do we give the ball to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's a voice on the field. Give the ball to me. Those are the moments that are like really, I believe, not only in sports but also in life and in business, that really expands our capacity, and also it triggers us to be even more.
Yeah. performing when the stakes are the highest. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Kathy. Very nice.
So can you give us a sense of how old you were or are at this time? And, you know, as a professional athlete, I normally don't ask my interviewees what their age is, but because you're an athlete, I kind of wanted to get a sense of where we are in your journey. Are you in your 20s at this point when you were winning?
I was a late bloomer in my competition career, just because I was on the fence of like doing this full time. And I started competing when I was 22, 23. And I took a break, and after a very serious injury, I blew my LCL, my MCL. Like most sports, you know, your body does have a scorecard, and the more you push it, the more there's that risk of you getting injured. And I had a really serious leg injury where I had a lot of my ligaments tore, and I was out for over a year and a half. But I started at 22, and I took a break at 25 to recuperate my body, to recuperate my brain, started diving into other roles in my life as a yoga teacher and CrossFit and other spectrums of the fitness world. After I took that break, I opened my studio, and that was one of the best choices I made too, because I'm either all in or all out. Once I got my studio running and going, the systems were in place, then I decided to go back to competition. And once I go back, this was when I was 29. My last match was when I was 31. I'm actually at the tail end of my career. Some people will say that like I do have a few more years left, but something really big has to pull me to get me back out there.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing the training is intense, but then the actual competition too is quite stressful on your body, and that's a big deal, right? The training and the competition, and
yeah, the training is for sure. It's 6 days a week, one day off, and it's twice a week, and you're doing from a combination from technique work to strength and conditioning, to building motor patterns, building strategy against your opponent. You're eating well all the time. You're always consistently checking in on your weight, because there's weight classes to competitions, and you want to make sure you're the biggest person in the smallest division. So you consistently are eating exactly the macros and micros. You're always in contact with your coaches, your strength coach, your striking coach, which is like your boxing coach or your kickboxing coach, and your grappling and your Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach. So that's a lot of work. And along with that, you also have responsibilities for your business. You also have to make sure your business is growing well. Your body does take a toll. But at this, once you're seasoned, you understand your body so well and what your body needs. It took me a while to get a good pattern of what my body needs until like my fourth or fifth year of competing. Now that I understand my body at the peak, I know exactly when to sleep, what to eat, how to train, what to push, not to push. With the injuries, you know, I'm very happy to say that was my hardest injury, really. And a few other aches and bruises, some cuts, some scars. But nothing as serious as other my friends. I've had teammates who've had serious concussions. I had teammates who really had the worst sort of all, tore retinas, and some had some really bad CTE where they can't really convey any message. They can't really reciprocate a great conversation with a partner or with anyone. That's something that scared me a lot when I was competing. And my mother voiced her opinion. She was like, in Spanish, she was like yelling at me, you know, I want you to talk to me when you're 50. I don't want a vegetable. And I was like, don't worry, Mom.
Yeah. Words of wisdom from Mom.
Well, so, I had to make her proud.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, did you finish college then? Because you mentioned that, you know, you opened your studio during this time. Did you finish college? Did you get that business degree?
I didn't, actually. This was a really interesting pivot in my life. I was in school, and when I started competing, and it's really, I'm sure there's other people who've done both, but I was at a point in my life where I had, it just goes back to either I'm all in or all out. And school was great, and I just felt a stronger pull. Once I started understanding what my journey starts craving into the competition side, I took a hard look at myself and decided to take a huge risk. I talked to my brother, my mother, and I told them, this is what I want to do for a living. They were very supportive, 110% supportive. They gave me a time frame, though. They gave me a time frame of, listen, you got 1 year to see, so we can see something out of you. If we don't see anything great, then you need to go back to school and figure this out. I can't explain how fortunate I was to have a supportive family. I took that very serious. I left school on the second semester. I talked to my coach. I told him, hey, if I have to sleep in the gym, I'm going to do that. If I have to take 3 jobs, which I did, I'm going to do that. But this is what I want to do. I want to become a world champion, and I want to become a professional athlete. He took a day off. He's like, hey, listen, I'll talk to you tomorrow. He was very, he was great with his words, but this time around, he didn't know what to say. And he just told me that, let's talk about it tomorrow. And I was very anxious and nervous the next morning if he was going to say yes or no. I was just like putting myself out there and see what could happen. Next day, we decided to get together at the studio. And he said, hey, listen, if this is what you want to do, like, I want to support you 110%, but you must understand this is not going to be easy at any way. Everything you do, everything you say, and the person you're going to become is going to change. And you must take that responsibility 110%. And as a 23-year-old, I didn't understand that question. And he asked me 2 more times, and I finally said yes. Once I started moving forward, and that was it. And I haven't looked back, but it's brought great opportunities that I try to really, you know, continue to challenge myself and educate myself. And one of my goals is actually is to finish school. That's like one of my end goals. Like once I start settling down with my partner, we're going to look into me finishing my school.
Oh, okay. So you were able to compete. And so did you do you win prize money as a professional athlete? Or was it that you had all the side jobs to allow you to compete at that level? I'm trying to figure out where the funding comes in for when you start going down this path.
Great question, Kathy. Well, in the beginning, as an amateur, you don't get paid at all. You're just trying to make a name for yourself. Similar to like a band, a studio, like a rock band or a musician, you're just trying to make your name. And as an amateur, I had 3 jobs. And I was bartending, throwing on newspapers, and I was also helping with the Latin American Youth Center, which I'm also very connected with my Hispanic culture. So I was working for a nonprofit with Latino teens. So I had 3 jobs, and that was my funding. And all my funding went to training, competing, and educating myself. Once I went professional, then you start getting paid. And that alone was great as well. But I needed another leg of income. So I started my business. And something to fall back on as well. So once I started competing professionally, I started 2 legs of income. I started my online trainings and seminars, and I started my in-person studio in DC.
How did you know how to start and run a studio? Was that same mentor that you were at his studio that you're like, oh, this is the model that I see could work? Or did you have another mentor maybe on the business side?
I was really, really fortunate to have my mentor. He had multiple degrees in business and in accounting, along being a world champion kickboxer and a badass of himself. I was very, very fortunate, Kathy. And I consult other studios, and I see that that's one leg that many studios and gym owners are missing, those resources. And I attended a big conference in San Antonio for martial arts studio for martial arts owners. And I kept seeing the same pattern that many gym owners are they didn't really have a good mentor and how to build programs, how to be efficient, how to create systems. And I was very fortunate when I started my career to have a teacher and a mentor to teach me that in the beginning. He really focused on not just developing me as a professional athlete, but as a professional in the industry.
Two elements there, you know. Yeah, you as the competitor, but then you also as a business owner and as a trainer, because you're doing both. You're running the business, but you're also then the talent of the business.
Yes, yes. And then also to help others build their own businesses. I had another great mentor of mine. He was able to bring more experiences. And I think that's something about your listeners is something I can kind of voice is the more experiences you can get from other people. It's basically gold nuggets. Those things are worth, those are worth it. And I had other great people, other strong mentors who just were so kind enough to throw me gold nuggets of where they failed, where they succeeded, what I should be looking for, like what is exactly my goal and what does that look like instead of just a shotgun approach? You know, what are the two things you look for within this year to accomplish? And those things really helped me out, develop myself and my business, my instructors when I had my gym, and also my partners.
But the other side of that is that you as an individual have to be open to asking for help, asking for input and feedback. So it is kind of a two-sided thing. So it's great that you had those wonderful people in your lives. So how did you end up getting to Colorado then?
Sure. Well, that's actually been a dream of mine to live in Colorado. I started out coming here to Colorado for vacation, and I loved it. One of my clients brought me here to help him in his competition, and I was his teacher back home, and he moved here. He ran a couple of dispensaries, and there's a huge, like, it's funny, but jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and marijuana, there's a huge like overlap in the industry. Yeah, but he ran a couple of dispensaries, and he offered to house me and so I can train him for a competition. That was my second trip here, and I loved it, and I had to kind of figure out how to get here. And I decided the whole stationary, the in-person studio back home in DC wasn't a direction I wanted to take anymore. So I released myself off of it, sold it, and I started working consulting. And I started consulting other studios, other gyms. I had a great contract in California where I lived in LA. And I had a lot of great partners there, a lot of growth there. But Colorado's always been part of my end game. And once a big contract came here for Denver, I decided to take the leap of faith, either all in or all out. I decided once my contract was over in LA, I decided to move here and consult on a wellness studio, a co-working space, and also a martial arts facility called Easton's.
Wow. So you go from not being athletic as a young person to, again, I'm kind of repeating myself, I'll try this thing called karate, and then just moving into, excelling in it, being an amateur, then a professional, then you open your own studio. Now you're coaching people on how to run their studios. I love this. It's just been an evolution, a transition. It's great to hear. I guess one thought I have now is, any setbacks in this story in terms of, you mentioned the injury at age 25, but any other setbacks that have caused you maybe to doubt yourself or to, maybe any other pivots in your life?
Yeah. And this one might be very, this is actually a really hard one to some sense, and I'm getting much better at exploring it more, but, and now I take full pride in. But when I came to America, I came here illegally. And I came here undocumented. My mother took a huge risk because she wanted to. My father wasn't the greatest man, and you know, he was a very very abusive, very controlling. And my mother decided to live a better life and be with her sisters. And my aunts were here in the U.S. and she had to find a way to get us here. And you know, she took a different turn and got us to the U.S. undocumented. And that's been a setback because if I mentioned before about getting a scholarship in art, I couldn't take it because of my status. And when I started competing, there was opportunities I couldn't take because of my status. I had a contract in Bermuda to teach and compete, but I couldn't do it because if I left the States, I wouldn't be able to come back. I wouldn't be able to see my family again. So that's been a huge setback until I finally got my legal status resolved, and I was able to take more opportunities. One of the most memorable moments to me was when I was contracted to go teach in Thailand. I taught and trained in Thailand, and at that time I was so scared because of my migration. What if they don't let me back in? And there's a circle, there's like a pattern here, big risk, big reward. I looked at myself, I looked at my professional career, I was really happy and content. And I said, well, what if I don't get in? That's fine, I'll be okay. I have the skills, I have the confidence, I have all the tools to still be, to excel myself in any place in the world. So I decided to take that, again, leap of faith. And I left the U.S., went to Thailand, and had amazing connections, had amazing training, grew my business there, was able to come back to the U.S. Thank God let me back in. That's been a big hurdle in my life. The other hurdle has been just seeing my mother as a single parent. One of the big reasons I took martial arts because I wanted to, as a child, I could not protect my mom against my dad. And after a lot of self-work and after a lot of inner work, I realized that I looked to serve and help others because I couldn't help and serve my mom.
Wow, that was quite the question of any setbacks. Those are some pretty powerful events that were in your life at a very young age and really influenced who you were. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a business owner, on the business side of things, the setbacks, like many business owners, is just finding quality humans to surround yourself with. There's been times where I've had my studio and I just surrounded with the wrong staff, or I myself couldn't be the best efficient leader, and I had to take a step back. So those were learning points in my life where I had to be a better leader, be a better listener, and lead by example.
Yeah, those are all very key life lessons. I think we all as leaders at some point experience that time, that aha moment where you're like, and it comes from a variety of feedback tools, whatever way it is, that, okay, I'm not as brilliant as I thought I was. I'm part of the problem here. What can I do? And how do I engage these people to want to do their best? And how do I engage myself? So, well, Danny, yeah. I got to say, I could probably talk to you for another 2 hours at least. There's so many other questions that I have, but I do try to keep these interviews to about 45 minutes to 50 minutes. So let's start to wrap up a little bit here. Talk about what you think. Do you have any key themes in your life, or do you have any characteristics or something you think that really served you well throughout your life?
Oh, absolutely, Kathy. And this is a great question. I think everyone should really double down and trying to figure out what those questions mean to them too, as for your listeners. For me, it's going high risk, high reward. Nothing that is valued doesn't come easy. So using that exact belief, I was able to get where I wanted to be in life.
And work hard to get it. It sounds like when you were in high school, you were just kind of going through the motions. But once you got into the martial arts, you realized what hard work could do. And it sounds like that changed your life big time.
Yeah, Yeah, and we talk a lot about hard work until we realize what that really means. So, and
Well,
yeah,
that's why that
and
coach kind of paused when you said you wanted to go professional, right? Or to compete, that he knew the work it was going to take and wasn't sure you knew the work it was going to take.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was like, "I don't know what you're asking for. You have no idea what you're asking for." And I try to tell all my students and clients that the rougher the water, the more glorious the travel.
Those are some words of wisdom. I like that. And then as we continue to wrap up here, any other words of wisdom that you would like to share?
Yeah, and since we're living in a very interesting time with the we're trying to live our best quarantine life. Right. But my only words of wisdom would be just to understand that we're all going through this together and we're doing our absolute best for one and the other, and to have patience with ourselves. Like with your career or your relationships, friendships, business, we have to be patient. And once we feel that opening, and just like in fighting, we calculate, we take risks, but we're calculated risks. And just like in fighting, take a break, sit back, and look at what you appreciate, what's grateful in your life. And then when you see opportunity, go ahead and take it. Take that punch, take that kick, take that leap.
Yeah, when you see the opportunity, I've been on several call. I'm part of several different, like advisory boards, networking groups, et cetera, which for listeners, this is kind of how Danny and I met, was through a mutual friend. But in these groups, that's been a common message. So your message is perfect, Danny. I really love that you kind of have to really pause as an individual right now. And the term that keeps coming up is give yourself grace or give yourself permission that. First off, we all have to survive. And so we have to be healthy and we have to be focused on that first. And then you can think about now how does the career and the money and the job and all of that work? Because if, like you're saying, if the opportunity isn't there, you can't force it, you can't create it. If your health isn't there, you can't take that step either. So it's very important that we do pause, and we have to stay safe first. So well, thank you, Danny. This has been so fascinating. I know that your story has probably way more elements, but I really appreciate how you were so authentic and shared some of the highs, but also some of the lows and some of the side points. And I got a definite message about, all along the way, you're working hard and but also making sure that you're paying attention to your body and listening to what you need. So sounds like a great example of walking your talk.
Thanks, Kathy. It was great. It was a great experience. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. And listeners, if you have any questions for Danny, please post them on my website, lifestorycurator.com, and I'll make sure to get them to Danny. When I post this on my website as well, Danny, please just give me your links so people can find your studio, can find how they can find you. So that I don't have to be the go-between, but I'm also happy to be the go-between. It was great meeting you, and I know we got to meet in person at a fundraising event last fall, but hopefully we'll get to meet in person once this quarantine is lifted, and I would like to get to know you better. So thank you so much.
I love that. Thank you. The feeling is mutual, Kathy. Thank you so much again.
And listeners, if you like today's interview, please subscribe below so you are alerted to future interviews. And on that note, we'll wrap up and stay safe and stay well. Thank you.
Ciao.